Welcome back. I'm Ian Master. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Domenico Lombard, who's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution specializing in global economy and development. He is an expert on the G20 and G8 summits, international monetary relations, and global currencies. His current projects focus on the recent international financial crisis, the ongoing European crisis, and the reform of the IMF and the World Bank. Welcome to Background Briefing, Domenico Lombard.
Thank you.
And of course, this has been a very dramatic day in Italy, Domenico, with the Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi telling apparently the President of Italy, Giorgio Napolitano, that he plans to step down after the next budget is approved by Parliament. So that's a bit of a switch from the kind of defiant Berlusconi who has survived over 50 no confidence motions. Is he sort of is this his signal that I'm going to sacrifice my political career for the good of the country, or do you think he's going to make another comeback?
Well, the signal that we have seen today is that his days as the Prime Minister of Italy may be numbered, but not necessarily in terms of the politician who's still able to shape the Italian political faith. And in fact, what the results have shown today is that he doesn't have a big enough majority in the lower chamber of the parliament, running 8 MPs short, but he still commands a majority in the Senate. And therefore, as a result, he's still able to have a veto power over any further political development. He may not be able to have enough of a political strength to back his own government, but of course he would have a considerable say, if not an outright veto power, in determining the future political choice in the country.
But the budget vote, which was passed with 380 votes, more than half of the country's 630 lawmakers abstained or didn't even show up for the vote. They didn't want to prevent the budget from being approved, but they also didn't want to lend Berlusconi any support. So that seems to be the mixed signal here.
The opposition decided to abstain. They could have voted against. They decided to abstain because they realized that if they had voted against, this would have triggered the freezing of all the government spending, with unpredictable consequences, especially in light of the current circumstances Italy is going through. But the political outcome remains that Berlusconi is not able to leverage on a majority in the lower house, and therefore the option that the center-right coalition is exploring at the moment is to present an alternative candidate drawn from the same coalition, whom they hope will be able to attract some marginal votes from earlier defectors in the lower house, so that the center-right coalition will still be in charge and will be able to express a new government replacing the current Berlusconi's government.
So, Domenico Lombard, what is going to happen then in terms of, because Italy's the yield on Italian bonds hit a record high on Monday, very close to the 7% mark, which is considered unsustainable. So what's going to be done here to turn things around? You're saying that Berlusconi has not exited the scene. So what's going to be done in terms of Italy's debt, which is about 120% of its economic output? I believe it's about, 2.6 trillion dollars we're talking about?
The current stock of the Italian public debt is 1.9 trillion of euros, which approximately are equivalent to $2.6 trillion. It's also equivalent to 120% of the Italian GDP, and is therefore one of the highest debt in the world, something that could really trigger a systemic collapse of the global financial system if the Italian crisis were left to escalate without any proper corrective action. And this is why the President of the Republic, of course, will have a key role, because based on his own constitutional mandate, once he formally receives the resignation from Mr. Berlusconi, he will be then in a position to open consultations among all the party political leaders and appoint someone who must command a possible majority in both houses of the parliament. Clearly, the financial markets have already expressed their no confidence vote with respect to Mr. Berlusconi's government. His government has had a long window of opportunity to engineer a number of reforms to stabilize market pressure, and yet a constant delay of action have dragged the country to the point where it is right now. Some political observers, as well as many citizens, hope that this defeat will pave the way to a more reformist-minded government, which might ideally be led by an eminent personality who would command the highest respect in Italy, in Europe, and in the world, and could possibly be outside the political circles. But the fact remains that the center-right coalition still have an overwhelming political force despite today's results, and of course they are going to use all the levers they have to affect the future political developments of the country.
Again, I'm speaking with Domenico Lombard, Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution, whose projects focus on recent international financial crises, the ongoing European crisis, and reform of the IMF and the World Bank. So what's the ticking clock with Italy? Isn't there a $300 billion payment that's due pretty soon?
Right now, the Italian Treasury has to borrow from the markets 37 billion euros till December 31st. And next year, throughout the whole 2012, the Treasury will have to roll over portions of the public debt equivalent to 287 billion euros approximately. These are big amounts, and this also highlights that traditional conventional instruments of intervention such as an IMF or a European Rescue Fund program would not be enough to stabilize Italy should the crisis escalate, simply because these institutions do not have enough financial firepower. And this is why the emphasis is on the preventive side, on escalating the pressure on the authorities to make sure that they act needed corrective policy measures on the one hand, and on the other hand, they have persuaded the authorities to ask for monitoring from the International Monetary Fund, who's going to come to Rome in the next few days to agree on a program of implementation of reforms, which the IMF is going to monitor on a quarterly basis so as to provide a sort of independent third-party monitoring to the progress that the authorities will be making. Clearly, this escalation of the crisis in Italy creates a great deal of suspense in Europe. President Sarkozy is well aware that the destiny of his own country is tightly linked to that of Italy, the neighbor, simply because many French banks have too many Italian government bonds in their portfolios, as well as having direct stakes in some Italian banks. And therefore, any fallout or even a deterioration in the Italian financial sector would have a direct spillover effect to France, and through France, of course, Germany would also be affected. And this is exactly why European leaders and the U.S. administration are doing everything they can to make pressure, to pressure the Europeans, in particular the Italians and the President of the Republic right now, to make everything they can so that corrective policy measures are enacted at the earliest.
So, Domenico Lombard, it seems a little bit like we've seen this movie before in Greece and Ireland and in England too, with the austerity. And I'm trying to understand how it is that when you have a situation where the debts become unserviceable, where do you get the revenues? You can't. They keep borrowing money in order to cover the debt payments, but the only way you really get out of this hole is to generate revenues. The same thing applies to the United States government. We need to stimulate our economy, not go for austerity. Yet that's happening in England, and the results are manifestly clear. It's happening here. It's created a slowdown in our economy. Where is the are the revenues going to come? What's going to kickstart the Italian economy to start producing revenues to pay down these debts?
First of all, Italy, despite all its problems, is still very far away from the prospect of default. So this is clearly a deterioration of the market conditions that we are witnessing right now, maybe even a drastic deterioration, but we are still very far away from the prospect, even the prospect of a default. That said, the true underlying weakness of the Italian economy is not so much the fiscal balances, but a very low rate of growth that its economy has exhibited over the latest decade. And therefore, if you really want to tackle this situation, this instability that is emerging, that has been emerging over the latest few weeks and months, clearly the achievement of a balanced budget is important, but is not the fundamental element in this strategy, which is really to boost growth, to make sure that the economy grows at a much higher rate, so as to support the burden of a very high public debt. And this is really the key objective, but also the objective that the current Italian authorities have been missing for months. They've been focusing on the achievement of balanced budget without having, the broader picture. In the United States, the situation, I would say, is fundamentally different because, first, the economy has a very high rate of potential growth. Yes, the current economic recovery is weak, still needs to be nurtured, to be sustained, but overall, the economy has competitive enough, has is strong enough to exhibit in the long run a much higher rate of growth, which would be able, of course, in turn to sustain a higher pile of debt. That said, the current strategy that the policymakers and lawmakers in Washington are trying to enact, although with different accents depending on the political party, is one of supporting demand in the short term, to give a boost to the recovery in a framework of medium-term consolidation. And, of course, this is a very appropriate strategy, but one that also carries some risks because, on the one hand, you want to be supportive of aggregate demand, but at the same time, you cannot be too harsh in terms of, cutting expenditures because if I know that 1 year or 2 years down the road the government is going to cut my entitlements, of course I will have an incentive to save rather than buy more goods and services. So I think this is really where the tricky part lies, in finding the appropriate balance between a boost to the short term to the economy and at the same time, if a broader framework of medium-long-term consolidation.
Well, Domenico Lombard, there's certainly an analogy here with the United States, is that it's the lack of demand that has the economy stalled. Corporations are sitting on a lot of money, but customers and consumers just aren't buying. So what is this budget that has just passed without the with an awful lot of the lawmakers abstaining in order to get it to pass, but indicating, of course, that Berlusconi doesn't have a majority. What's in the budget? Because when analysts make these comparisons with Greece and Italy, obviously, which are very tenuous. The impression that one gets is that these economies that are in trouble, people don't pay their taxes, they have too many benefits and too many rich retirement packages, etc., and that those things have to be cut. So give us a sense of what this budget does in terms of what you just said, which is you don't really austerity is not going to help if people are going to retrench and save when you want them to spend.
The situation in the U.S. is again fundamentally different from that of Europe, insofar as it is certainly true that in Europe, national governments made their own mistakes, in some cases even fudged their national statistics, as has been the case of Greece, for instance. But it is also true that these countries have been exposed to a unique scope for contagion and spillovers given by the unprecedented monetary, financial, and economic integration among euro area countries, which at the same time, have exposed themselves to the unprecedented, as I said, spillovers from the policies of other countries in the monetary union. So and at the same time, on top of that, you've got that these countries, that there is not enough of an institutional framework that would compensate for this exposure to the spillovers from other countries. So just to make an example, in the case of Europe, the national governments do issue government debt, and yet it is a little bit as if this debt were issued in a foreign currency, because the central bank cannot really intervene in support of this debt that is being issued. In the United States, the situation is completely different, because the U.S., of course, issues its own currency, and therefore the Fed, the United States Central Bank, can play a unique stabilizing role. Where the country will stand, what kind of political future the country will be able to draw for himself. But I would really close by saying that the resignation by Prime Minister Berlusconi would not trigger necessarily a long-awaited political change.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Domenico Lombard.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Domenico Lombard, who's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, specializing in global economy and development. He is an expert on G20 and G8 summits, international monetary relations, and global currencies. His current projects focus on the recent international financial crisis, the ongoing European crisis, and reforms of the IMF and the World Bank. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking about demonstrations in Washington against the Keystone Pipeline.
Not to mess this place up.